life stories, passion, career growth, and success. You're listening to Historia with your host, Kim Gonzalez.
Hello, my dear listeners. It's your host, Kim, and I'm very happy to greet you pleasantly as we air another episode of this podcast. In this episode, I'd like to introduce you to our guest, originally from Toronto, Canada. Her name is Ina Figuatina, an ESL teacher who previously taught in Taiwan and also an author of a book titled Trilingual Me, Moi Trilingue. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kim. And I'm very impressed with your pronunciation skills with my last name and also with the title of my book, since it is also in French. So I'm very impressed. Well done.
Oh, thank you. I don't know how did I pronounce it, but thank you. I really appreciate it. Now, what I want to begin for my listeners is to have you do your introduction. Can you tell us about who you are and what you're working on today?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you today. So my name is Ina, and I am a second language teacher. I live in Toronto, Canada, but I was born in Moscow, Russia. So I immigrated to Canada when I was a child, and I've been in Toronto for over 20 years now. And as you mentioned, I taught ESL in Taiwan a couple of years ago, and I'm very excited to talk about my experience with you today. I have also published a bilingual children's book about my journey to becoming trilingual. So now I am a published children's author as well, and I am proudly trilingual. I speak Russian, English, and French, and I'm very, very excited to share my story with your listeners today.
Fantastic. I love how you introduce yourself. So you are a trilingual, you speak English, French, and Russian, and those are not just ordinary languages, they are difficult, right? They're difficult languages and it's hard to master, especially if you're someone who is from a different country or who doesn't speak those mentioned language at all. It's very impressive. So
thank you.
You're welcome. Yes,
I talk about the challenges that I overcame on my journey of becoming trilingual. I talk about it in my children's book, but I agree that it is something that I didn't realize what a big accomplishment this was until after I became trilingual. Because when you're in the process of learning these languages, you are so focused on your goal. And it's not until after you achieve the goal that you look back and you're like, wow, I can't believe I did this. This is amazing. Yeah. I'm so proud of myself.
Yes. And to realize how far you've gone after all you've sacrificed, after all these years of working on yourself, improving your communication skills, especially with languages. So very impressive. All right. So now I want to go with your origin story. Can you tell us about your early life and how you fell in love with the English language?
So, like I said, I was born in Moscow, Russia, and I have many great memories of my childhood in Moscow. I lived in the center of Moscow, and Moscow is the capital of Russia for those who might not be aware. But my parents decided to immigrate to Canada to have a better life and for better opportunities for us. And I was really excited to move to another country. But of course, I was also worried about not being able to speak the language. And at the time when they told me that we were going to immigrate, I didn't even know that there were two official languages in Canada. I thought that everyone just spoke English here. But in my first year living in Canada, I started learning English as my second language and French as my third language at school. In Canada, it is mandatory to learn French as a second language at school. But for immigrant students like myself, French is actually our third language. So this was something that I discovered after we immigrated, that I would have to learn not only one language, but two. And as I discovered my love of learning languages, I decided to become a language teacher when I grew up. So today I am a language teacher, and I'm so proud of my second language acquisition journey.
Yay! It's a wonderful journey from how you started as a kid in Moscow and then moved to Canada and then learned two languages there. So as far as I know, based on my experience as a customer service representative handling Canadian clients, yes, they have two languages. First is English, and they usually speak it mostly in Ontario, in the main province, and in, however, in French, I think it's more in Quebec, right? Mm-hmm. So that's as far as I know when it comes to languages in Canada. But still, it's a diverse country, and many people from a lot of countries immigrate there, including the Philippines. Yeah.
Yes, we have such a multicultural society here. Lots of immigrants, like you said, from all over the world. And yeah, it's one of the reasons why I love living here and why I love being a teacher in Canada, because I get to teach so many diverse students.
Yes, coming from different culture, from different nationalities, you get to know their traits, their what they're capable of. So very impressive. Now,
and I also get to learn about their cultures as well.
Yes, that's right. So before we go to another chapter of your life, I want to know more about your language skills. When you were starting your journey in Canada, so was there a time where you laughed at back then because you couldn't speak the word of English? How was it difficult for you to learn English back then? And how did you learn the language over time?
So when I first arrived to Canada, I didn't speak any English at all or French. And it was a huge struggle for me to go from being independent back home to now being dependent on the Russian-speaking classmates to translate everything from me, from asking to go to the bathroom and not understanding what my teachers were saying. I remember I was feeling very frustrated and very sad because, like I said, when I was living in Moscow, I could understand everything and express myself easily. And now I was not able to do that. And I was very fortunate, though, to have a lot of support around me during my language acquisition journey, from the teachers that I had in elementary school, such as my ESL teacher. And then later on, when I started learning French, my amazing French teachers, my homeroom teachers, also my classmates were a huge support, which I'm very, very grateful for, to have a supportive group of peers that helped me. And of course, also my family, who was also so supportive during all of the challenging times that I had trying to adjust to this new life in Canada. And unfortunately, my parents couldn't really help me with my language acquisition because they also only spoke Russian, and at home we spoke Russian. So we were all learning English together at the same time. I learned it at school and they were learning it at work and in the community. So in terms of having that help with the language at home, I couldn't get the help from them, but they were very supportive in terms of getting me tutor. I had a wonderful French tutor who I learned French with on the weekends for over 5 years. And my parents were very supportive of my love for French and love of learning languages. And they tried their best to help me as best they could because they couldn't speak the language. So they got me this amazing tutor. And in the book that I published, I actually dedicate my book to my family because they were with me through every step of my language acquisition journey. And I'm so grateful to everyone who helped me along the way.
Yes, I'm really happy that you were able to master all the languages that you mentioned because of the support of your family. I could even imagine how you were practicing English together in the same room or in the same household. Also, your peers, they're translating for you. I bet they're writing, they're listing things down, and then they show it to you on a piece of paper when you were young. So I think those are the scenarios I can imagine when you mentioned about your story. So it's fun. It's fun and it's super happy. So now I want to go with your turning point moment, or I would say your awakening moment. So can you recall the time where you decided to become a teacher and then write a book? So what inspired you or what motivated you to execute those ideas?
That's a great question. So the reason that I wrote my book was because I was doing a master's of education program, and the book is actually my thesis project for the master's. And I completed my master's program in French, actually, which, as you know, is my third language. And that is something that I'm extremely proud of. And when I was presenting my thesis project to my master's cohort, I got really emotional reading my children's book to them because it hit me how much I have accomplished from being a little girl. And I had some speech difficulties when I was young and learning Russian, to then immigrating to Canada and learning English and French at the same time, and now becoming a French teacher and finishing a master's degree in French and publishing a bilingual children's book to celebrate this language acquisition journey. It really hit me when I was presenting it and reading the book to my professors and my classmates. And this is something that I will always, always remember, was that moment of during the presentation of the feeling of accomplishment and pride that I felt for everything that I had gone through. And I'm really happy that the book is published and that I'm able to share my story with so many people now all around the world. And hopefully the book inspires others who are going through their own language acquisition journey. In terms of why I decided to become a teacher and a language teacher in specifically, when I was learning both English and French as a child after I had immigrated and I discovered my love of language learning, I knew that this is what I wanted to do as my career. So I knew early on when I was still in elementary school that I wanted to be a languages teacher. And now that I am a language teacher, I feel like it's like a full circle moment where I once was an ESL student and an FSL student learning these new languages. And now I'm on the other side as the teacher teaching others these languages. And it's so rewarding to not only see how far I have come, but now also to pay it forward and to help others who are learning these languages as well.
Wow, I love it. I love your comments, the story on how how it hit you when you published your book, your thesis project. So it summarizes how far you've come from working and from Russian language, and then you work on the English language and then French, and then you will say, oh my God, I can't believe it. I can't believe this is happening now. It's a dream come true. It is a dream realized, becoming a reality. So it is truly an emotional moment. And if I were in your position, I would feel the same as well, because of my accomplishments, the hardships, the difficulties I've gone through. And I can see that it's truly rewarding. So yeah, it's just an amazing moment, that awakening moment where you realize that you'll become a teacher, you will become a language expert one day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's amazing.
I just wanted to add that after I became a language teacher, I was looking to find resources for children that talked about the experience that I went through and that the students who I teach are going through, which is all of the different emotions that come with learning a new language. I wasn't able to find that. So this was another reason why I decided to publish my children's book, was to create a resource for other language teachers that they could use, which celebrates the linguistic diversity of the students in our classroom. And so that students can see themselves in the character in the book as someone who has some challenges that they have to overcome during this language acquisition journey, as someone who wasn't born in the country where they're learning these languages, who went through the experience of immigration. And this is something that I hope my book reaches a lot of language teachers, and I hope that it will be a part of their classroom and that they can share it with their students, because that was the goal of me writing this book and publishing it and having it out and available for teachers, as well as multilingual families, to share it with the children that can see themselves in the story and that they can relate to the story because of something that they are currently going through themselves.
Yes, that's right. I think there's not a lot of books out there that resonates with kids when it comes to language learning. For me personally, I've read some books, especially novels, mostly about fiction. They're mostly about entrepreneurship, self-development. But when it comes to language, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm not searched enough, or maybe I'm not that resourceful enough. But so far, based on my experience, I haven't had any book read when it comes to language learning, learning a second language so far. Yeah, so I can see that this is going to resonate with a lot of people, especially the kids. And people can use it with, especially to people who are learning English and other languages. Right? I am sure that it will resonate with them. Yeah.
I really appreciate you saying that. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome. Okay, so this time, I'd like to know about your first class. So can you still recall your first class with kids? So how did you feel, and how did it push you to become the person you are now?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I started teaching at a young age. I knew that I wanted to be a language teacher when I was still in elementary school. So I started tutoring and doing a co-op placement in high school. I also worked at French summer camps when I was a teenager. And I did my practicums as a student teacher in my early 20s. And then I started my career at 23 years old. And all of the hard work that I put into learning the languages and all of my teacher training, it all paid off. And I remember stepping into my first classroom and feeling so excited to start my career and to share my passion for FSL.
Nice. So did you have any butterflies in the stomach, like the feeling of nervousness? So what did you teach at that time?
I definitely felt more excited than nervous. I don't remember any negative feelings like self-doubt or I was so excited to finally be teaching and to meet the students and to teach them and show them how amazing the language is and teach them about the culture and how the two go hand in hand. And yeah, I just have such positive memories of when I first started teaching. It was really wonderful. Like you said, a dream come true.
Amazing. So it came out naturally to you, like it didn't have any moment of hesitation. I noticed that you were confident in your first day of school, first day of class, and first class ever. You know what? When I was starting as an ESL teacher, when I started my first class, I was really nervous. I don't have any idea about how I'm going to pull this off because, first of all, I'm not, my degree is more focused on communication rather than teaching English. Yes, but I still love English though. It is part of my life since I was a kid. When I was young, I used to consume a lot of English content already. So, yeah, I did hesitate at first. And at the same time, I didn't know what I'm going to do with these kids. I didn't have any experience. And I'm glad that I was able to overcome it. And I'm more confident now with teaching English, not only with kids, but also with adults as well.
Definitely, the confidence increases the more you do it, the more practice you have, and the more experience you get. So I can definitely relate to that.
Yes, I agree. All right. So my next question comes with, it's actually a community interaction. So I did a poll in my Facebook community, a Facebook group, a few weeks back about the teacher's teaching preferences. So my question was, which group of people is or are easier to teach? And in that poll, I found out that the children are easier to teach at 9 votes, while the adults have 5 votes, including me. So although I've heard it already from you in our private talk before this recording session, I'd like to have our listeners hear more about it. Why are children easier to teach than adults?
Well, I think that teaching a group of any age has its challenges, but personally, I prefer teaching children because at a young age, they are very curious. And they find learning fun. And I find that as the language teacher, I get to plant the seed for language learning and the love of language learning while they're still at a young age. While when you're teaching teenagers or adults, personally, in my experience, I find that they already have some reservations about learning, perhaps from a negative past experience that they've had. So they might not be as excited to learn a new language. Not to mention that with the younger children, I can do a lot of fun things like sing and do dramatic plays. So give them a script that they can act out. And the older children and adults aren't really that interested in singing and acting, at least in my experience. So personally, I prefer teaching at the elementary level. But why don't you share why you prefer teaching the older age groups?
I see. Okay. So when it comes to teaching the older age groups, what I like about it is I am able to share my own experiences, my own thoughts about a particular topic or a subject. And what I like about adults is that if they're really interested in learning English, they are dedicated into it and they give 100% of their time into learning the language. So they already have a goal set in mind, and all you have to do is to assist them with their goal. Whereas, as you mentioned, in kids, you get to plant the seed, while in the adult part, you get to cultivate the seed. So I think that's another perspective.
Thank you for sharing. I see your point. I understand what you mean.
Hey, great. Fantastic. So my next question is regarding your experience in Taiwan, teaching kids in Taiwan. So what's unique with their curriculum and what is the main focus of their early education system?
So I taught in Taiwan back in 2017 as part of a summer teach abroad program that I participated in with my school board. So it was a month long, and I taught ESL to two cohorts of grade 7 girls. So they were about 12 to 13 years old. And the curriculum that I taught consisted of a lot of Canadian references. There was a big focus on culture. So we talked about Canadian culture, in particular, Canadian food, like poutine. Do you know what poutine is, Kim?
No, what's that?
No worries. I'll explain what it is. So poutine is actually a Quebecois dish. It originated in Quebec. And it consists of French fries covered in gravy. And on top of that, they put cheese curds. So it's cheese, gravy, and French fries. And although it might not sound very appetizing, it is actually extremely delicious. And we actually... After I taught my students about poutine and we were talking about it in class, we even looked up a poutine restaurant in Taipei. We found a poutine place that they could go and they could try it out. And it was so great to teach them about Canada and also compare the two cultures. They taught me a lot about Taiwan and the Taiwanese culture. And we talked about some similarities and differences between the Canadian and Taiwanese cultures. And I remember they found it so bizarre that in Canada, peanuts are actually banned at school because we have a lot of children that are allergic to peanuts.
Oh.
Whereas in Taiwan, they don't have this rule. And I remember sharing this with the students and they were so shocked, like, what do you mean you can't bring peanuts to school?
Oh.
So it was really fun to share about our countries, and we had a lot of great discussions, and I really, really enjoyed teaching them.
I see. I really love the uniqueness of the culture. I see that they're looking to immerse their kids into other cultures as well, not only exposing them with their own culture, and then, but also they try to incorporate other cultures with them as well.
That's okay. Right.
I think I've heard of the word actually, poutine. Am I correct? Poutine.
That's right. Yep, you got it.
Oh, okay. I remember now. And I can see it's gravy, French fries, and gravy, potato fries, to be exact, or criscot. I'm not sure if it's criscot. It could come with in a criscot form sometimes. And yeah, it consists with a lot of cheese and gravy, of course. And it's really, really delicious. Even actually in a McDonald's restaurant, I would try to experiment my French fries, dipping it on the gravy. It's a little weird, but it actually turns out great. Sometimes,
so you've tried it before?
Yeah, I tried poutine in some restaurants. There are restaurants and cafes specifically. I think I've tried one before when I was in another city.
Ah, I see. Well, the one that I described, that's the original poutine. You can get creative and add some other toppings on top of that. And there's actually poutine festivals that I know there's one in Quebec that they have an annual poutine festival. I actually taught my students about this last year. So you go to the festival to try different types of poutine, and then there's different food trucks, and you get to vote on the best poutine, and then they get a prize, whoever wins.
Wow, that's amazing. I'd love to try the original poutine, because I see it could be a different version of poutine I had at that point. So I think it differs. I mean, the experience and the taste, the quality of the dish is going to be different when you taste the original one, right? And also about the peanuts. Oh my, I'm really sad when I heard about peanuts being banned in Canada. I thought it's about choking incidents, but it's actually deeper than that. It's more of an allergic reaction to kids.
Yes, a lot of students have very severe peanut allergies that they actually require, they have to carry an EpiPen with them, because the reaction, if they are exposed to peanuts, which sometimes might happen because they might add nuts to certain snacks, for example, like a granola bar. So some children have very, very severe allergies. So this is why, to avoid any issues, we just don't allow anyone to bring anything with that might contain peanuts. And also, it's something that we take very seriously, because it's so, so common here. These allergies are very, very common here. So that's why we take it so seriously at school.
I felt sad about that. You know, I can't eat peanut butter or any peanut related goods. Oh no.
You can at home, but yeah, not at school. Yeah, and you can't have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch at school here. when you think about it, it's for a good reason. So
yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know that this wasn't a problem in Taiwan. This was like, yeah, no problems. We can eat it at school.
Yes,
we don't
anytime.
Apparently people are not allergic to peanuts in Taiwan. I'm not sure why it is so severe here, these peanut allergies. But so you're saying that in the Philippines, you don't have a rule like this at school?
No. Actually, we eat peanuts. When I was a kid, when I was still a student, I'm eating peanuts. Also, during my break, my recess, I would also eat peanuts sometimes. So yeah, it's just surprising to me. And that's why I got sad when I heard about the news that you're not allowed to eat peanuts. Oh, okay. So I guess at this point, I want to give our listeners some ideas about working as a teacher in Taiwan or in Taipei. So do you have any pointers or pieces of advice?
Well, I absolutely love teaching and living in Taipei. And I loved it so much that after I taught there in 2017, I came back in both 2018 and 2019 on vacation. And although I did the program through my school board, so the visa process and the accommodation were all taken care of for me, I would recommend that if you're planning to go teach in Taiwan, that you come prepared. So if you're coming in the summer, it's going to be very humid. But it is an amazing place. And I highly recommend you visit the amazing night markets.
Night markets. Interesting. What are they all about? Okay, I'm going to research that after this session. Night market. So yeah, I'll go ahead and work on it later.
So yeah, definitely. I highly recommend the night markets. They're the best in the world in Taipei. Wow. They're amazing. The food there is incredible.
Really? Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm looking forward to it when I visit. If ever I'm going to visit Taiwan in Taipei, I'll check out the night markets right away.
I miss them so much.
I see. Okay, thank you so much for the pointers. Now, at this point, let's talk about your book and why people should read it. I think you've already given a quick background, but can you tell me more details about it?
So my book, Trilingual Me, Moi Trilingue, is a bilingual children's book, and it is written in both English and French. So there's two languages in the one book, and it rhymes in both English and French, which I'm very proud of because I worked really hard to make sure that it rhymed in both languages and that the level of the language was still simple enough for children to understand. So my book is meant to inspire others who are on their own journey of learning a new language. And it is an amazing tool to use to develop literacy skills, especially in a multilingual household, where there might be more than one language spoken at home. And it is available to order online worldwide at your favorite online bookstore. So whether that's Amazon or there is another bookstore where you live, where you prefer to order it from, I'm very excited that it is available. So that anyone can order it from any country and share it with the children in the family.
All right, there we go. Fantastic. So Ina's book is available in Amazon, so you can order it online anywhere. could be anywhere in the country, wherever you are, it's available there. Okay. And one more thing is, where should we follow you on social media?
So you can follow me on Instagram. My handle is trilingualme.moitrilingue. You can also follow me on Facebook. I have the same handle. And you can also visit my website, which is ina.figatina@weebly.com.
Yay! All right, there we go. Kindly follow Ina Figatina on her social media accounts, especially in Facebook and Instagram, using the title of her book, right? At Trilingualme Moitrilingue. Yeah, there we go. Okay, fantastic. All right, so thank you so much, Ina. I really appreciate the time. It was fun. I really enjoyed the conversation today. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, Kim. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yes, you have a great day.
You've reached the end of another episode of Historia. If you like this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify. Also, check out Historia's social media accounts for more pieces of content. See you in the next one.